Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard, Techno Shaman, and Audio Futurist, and other cool stuff too. It is April 20th, 420. April 20th, 9:27 a.m. 2024. Oh, wait, I missed a day. Saturday, goodness. But yeah, I don't really care about 420. I don't smoke anything like that. But I did want to continue the conversation about hip hop. About hippity hop. Terrible. I found myself really enjoying that little rant, I suppose. So I want to continue that. I feel like I was focusing too much. Maybe not too much, but I'm focusing a lot on the positive aspect of, like, the intention, you know, behind hip-hop and stuff like that and rap. And sure, I got into how it got corrupted, in my opinion, but I did want to really spend some time talking about the problems, right? Because there are some significant problems with hip-hop and rap in general, or really music in general, or really anything. This applies to almost anything these days under capitalism. But nonetheless, I did want to talk about that and my own, you know, kind of dreams for where, you know, the genre can go. So yeah, I'm gonna get into that a little bit today, and we'll see if I get into some other stuff. Anyways, so I was mentioning how the original kind of idea for hip hop, right, came from this idea of, like, finding a healthy way of expressing, you know, one's emotions and problems and stuff like that. But another aspect of that I did neglect to talk about is the fact that it also started out in a club, you know, or like a party type of feel, right? It was like a with DJs and things like that, right? Like, a big part of it was out of the kind of like disco scene and stuff like that. So there's a huge aspect of that goes into it too. That's all about just fun and entertainment and stuff like that. And I suppose that's where you can say, you know, you might have an argument for, like, the poppy side of hip hop, of, like, you know, wanting it to, or being, or why it's so open, I suppose, to mainstream appeal and to, you know, be more pop friendly. Nonetheless, I still maintain that it's a separate genre than pop. Like, pop is its own genre, even though, again, it's just popular music. But I do stand that it's its own genre, and hip hop, even if it has, you know, some pop influences or has influenced pop in very heavy ways, I still think it should be its own. You know, they're different genres. And what else I was going to come from that? Oh, yeah. So I'm thinking that you have this two kind of origins of hip-hop music. This kind of dance party entertainment side and this kind of expression side that comes from, you know, talking about one's life and where you come from. And because a lot of folks, especially around that time, you know, came from, you know, these hard-hit communities. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this last time, but, like, you know, those, a big reason why a lot of those communities were so hard-hit, in addition to just them being black, like, in an extremely racist country, was also because of the crack epidemic, right? And we know for a fact, like, there's plenty of evidence nowadays that shows that a lot of that was planted in black communities, right? So a lot of communities were hit extra hard by that. And so that's why you also see the I want to say talking points, but is that a good way of saying it? But, like, just the concept or the topic of drugs and gangsters and, you know, kind of a violent life being so prevalent in hip-hop. is because, you know, that's what the life was like. Primarily because of the prevalence of drugs in these communities. So, and I wish I would, I kind of want to do a version of this, because just yesterday I was watching this great FD video. Those that don't know, it's a YouTuber, FD Signifier. On his B-Size channel, he talked about, answered question. I think the title was called like "An Old Head Answers Questions About Hip Hop" or something like that. And it was really good to get a better idea of, like, you know, what hip hop was like in the 80s and 90s. More specifically in the 90s, because that's kind of where he grew up. But something he said that I think I would love to do myself is, like, talk to an old head about what hip-hop was like back then. With the knowledge, right, he mentions this too, that many old heads will be wrong or will just straight up, you know, lie, or just not... Well, sort of lie, but like downplay certain things or upplay other things. Like, for instance, you know, the idea that hip hop was has degraded after all these years and stuff like that, ignores the fact that a lot of hip hop was not very good in the 80s and the 90s, right? Even the foundations, right? The founders of hip hop, you know, you can clearly hear the difference in skill. In terms of how people rapped back then versus how people rap nowadays, right? Even if you count, like, the quote-unquote mumble rapping of today, right? There's definitely been an evolution in flow patterns and stuff like that. Like, people that tired Southern triplet flow, like, do, like, not only was that, did a lot of that come from, you know, older Southern rappers like 3 6 Mafia or rap groups, but also the rapping kind of style back then was, especially when it first started, was extremely simple, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, I'm going down the street to go to the store. You know, it was super simple, right? So let's not get it twisted here. Like, there's definitely been an evolution in hip hop. And a lot of old heads will say stuff like, oh, you know, rap today is more raunchy than ever, more violent than ever, and stuff like that. But again, a lot of that started, and it was pretty bad in the 90s, even before then. Like, there's always been extremely raunchy music, always been a lot of violent music, especially, or not always, but like starting specifically from the 90s with the gangster rap and stuff like that. If you ever heard Biggie, that stuff is crazy, right? And he's not the one. There's plenty of other folks that have done some. Golly. I don't know if you hear that, but I just hate those cars. It's just extremely loud for no reason. But yeah, all that to say that a lot of this stuff is not new, right? It has existed in these older kind of forms and stuff like that. So, nonetheless, it's still valuable to talk to old heads, because it gives you an idea of other aspects of the culture that may have been forgotten, right? Like, for instance, all the artists that were still really good, but you don't really hear about today, right? Because they get overshadowed by, like, the popular ones, like Biggie, Pac, and Nas, and Jay-Z, and stuff like that. But there were other folks that were really good, but are not less talked about. Like, he mentioned, like, for instance, Common. Like, even a lot of people know about Common, more or less, but they don't really know about Common. Like, they don't understand, like, how good he was and his impact back then. You know, folks like Fugees and what else he pointed out? Rakim, even. And a bunch of other folks, right? And that video was really great for me, because I'm like, I'm a take a lot of those names that I haven't heard about and go check out their stuff. But all that to say, it's really easy to forget, you know, how things change and what used to be prevalent and stuff like that. Nonetheless, what's also, well, he brought up a lot of things I mentioned before, right, in terms of how the industry or the genre has changed from the 80s to the 90s specifically, right? And that the origins in the 80s and before then was, again, more hip-hop, more, goodness, more entertainment, more music, or goodness, more party music and stuff like that. And on the other side of that was also the, again, the expression of the art, to express one's life and stuff like that. But again, when people start playing that up, right, in the 90s, getting into that kayfabe in the 90s, then you begin to have this glorification, the seemingly glorification of that lifestyle, as opposed to the expression of that lifestyle, right? And that's what got popular. And in my opinion, this is where a lot of the toxic elements of hip-hop has come from, right? Is the commodification of hip-hop, specifically the commodification of the glorification of, you know, these quote-unquote lifestyles. So there's always been an issue with misogyny, and that's just because we live in a patriarchal world and have lived in such for hundreds of years, even thousands in certain places. Even though, granted, a lot of things coming from Africa was more either matriarchal or more egalitarian, but there was still a lot of patriarchy as well. So that misogyny was kind of baked in. Now, what's interesting, though, is that the homophobia is actually fairly new, specifically in black culture or in African culture, because if you look back, a lot of black folk hate to hear this nowadays with how completely indoctrinated they are. But in a lot of African societies, prior to the prevalence of colonialism, right, a lot of black, or I should say before that, a lot of African cultures, right, had their own gender fluidity, right? And you can see this even in places that were somewhat very religious, right? Because what people don't realize is that even amongst the most religious, or most of the religious, there's some that was different, but even amongst the very religious different African empires that were still patriarchal and still, you know, had some sort of belief in some godlike figure, they were also very polytheistic, meaning, you know, they had this belief in multiple godlike figures, right? And this is a prevalent aspect of African culture, African history, all across a number of different cultures. Of course, it's also true in many other folks. Like, of course, you know the Greek gods and the Norse gods and stuff like that. That's a polytheistic kind of aspect. But it's different in a lot of places in Africa, because a lot of those, they had gods that were not necessarily above you. All right, like, obviously they were very powerful, but there's many, many stories of people outsmarting the gods, or tricking the gods, or even like the idea of the trickster god, like Anansi and stuff like that. I mean, granted, it's somewhat similar to Loki, but still very different in other ways, and that they were able to, you know, either trick Anansi or use Anansi to trick the other gods, right? And I say all this because some of this played into the aspect of being different figures, if they're being different ways of human expression, right? There were different, like, a big way that they brought people into these cultures or these belief systems is through rituals. And they had, like, secret societies, for instance. And many of those secret societies and rituals and stuff like that was gender specific, right? So they would have a ritual for quote-unquote males to, you know, be indoctrinated or be brought into the fold. I wouldn't necessarily say it's indoctrinated, because they, you know, might wait until after, you know, you got your rite of passage or whatever into adulthood. But in order to get, you know, brought into a certain secret society or whatever, they would often have it based on gender. And it wasn't just male or female, it was also, unfortunately, we don't have the words for this, but they also had fluid, basically, goodness, talking so much. But they basically had fluid cultures in many different societies. And I should have looked this up, so I can refer back to specific cultures that had specific names. But this is just from memory, from what I remember researching before a couple months back. But all that to say that Africa, homosexuality and transsexuality or trans gender, stuff like that, is not new to Africa. You see this in many, many cultures throughout Africa. In fact, you see this in many, many cultures throughout most of the world, right? It's only in very specific places, usually monotheistic kind of religions or cultures that depend on those religions, that eventually begin to try and control people's gender and control people's expression in order to, you know, affect more effective control over the population. And that's why a lot of homophobia and transphobia and such like that was introduced. Because if you can control how people express themselves, right, then you can control people more easily, right? And there's a whole thing we can get into, but going way off topic here. But all that to say that for black folks in general, right, homophobia and transphobia was fairly new, that came with colonialism and slavery and the indoctrination of monotheistic Christianity. Drink some water. So all that's a big reason I said, because you did have some forms of Christianity in Africa, of course, prior to that, like Ethiopia, but many other places, even though they may have adopted some elements of Christianity or other, you know, monotheistic beliefs, restrict themselves, I should say, to the monotheistic belief system, right? They put it within their polytheistic system. And of course, many colonials or like hardcore Christian believers and stuff like that did not really like that, because that seems like blasphemy, but that's what a lot of them did. And you see that even today in like places like Haiti, where people would still, you know, worship some elements of like Oshun and the Osiris, I think it's called, stuff like that, alongside Christianity. But anyways, so yeah, a lot of this is fairly new, and it was unfortunately a mainstay of, or a result of, slavery and stuff like that. And so that really calcified during the 1900s, especially, as a lot of black cultures began to get their quote-unquote freedom and try to, you know, many of them unfortunately tried to do that by emulating white folks, by emulating, you know, the culture that white folks have in terms of Christianity, in terms of what's seen as normal, and so on and so forth. And it's probably a whole bunch of other stuff I can point out, but yeah, all that to say, like, that homophobia aspect was fairly new in the grand scheme of things, but it got calcified in a lot of hip-hop culture, right? Because it was villainized at that time, and it was easy to use that as a, you know, means of denigrating others and so on and so forth. So, on top of all that, of course, you had because hip-hop became more popular, more mainstream, and more of a way to get out of the hood, right? You had people playing more and more into the machismo, right? Into the patriarchal kind of really toxic masculinity that made the music so popular in the mainstream. And because of that, you see more and more misogyny, you see more and more of a focus on this, you know, toxic masculinity kind of mindset and quote-unquote lifestyle, the idea of, you know, this man that's super powerful, you know, got all the guns, got all the money, got all the girls, you know, And so that just becomes a vicious cycle. So I put all this out to say that even though hip hop is inundated with this sort of thing today, it is by no means a central part of hip hop. I mean, it seems like it now, but again, because it did not start like that, and because you can easily have a whole, you know, much of the culture without that, then I think it's very possible to change. It's not necessarily easy nowadays. It's going to be fairly hard because of how indoctrinated we are now, but I do think it is very, very possible. And I think you see that too with the inclusion of more and more women in hip-hop, more and more homosexual folks, or really just queer folks in general, I should say that. Like, for instance, you know, a lot of the bounce scene, you know, and twerking in general has come from, you know, queer folks. And I think it was, what, New Orleans? Yeah, pretty sure it was from that area. And that, you know, played a huge part in the culture. And that was decades ago, right, that impact started. And you see a lot of it coming out more and more nowadays. And I think that's very healthy, right? I think that's a reclamation of the culture and kind of fixing up the problems that happened with the commodification of the culture in the 90s. And then on top of all that, like, something that really bothers me too, as a person that loves to delve into history and Africa and stuff like that, is oh my gosh, how is it escaping me now? Like the Afrocentrism, Hold up. Let me pause it. Oh my gosh, Hoteps. I don't know why that word was completely just escaping my mind, but yeah, Hoteps. Yeah. Really, really, I don't want to say I hate them, but I do not like them folks. Like, they really cast a super bad name on Afrocentrism. I don't want to call it Afrocentrism. It's Afrocentrism. I want to say like Pan-Africanism. And that's kind of like the origins, right? That's what's interesting about this. And I do want to delve more into the history of Hoteps and how that really started, because I don't really know. But what I do know, or what I posit, is that, you know, a lot of it came from the Pan-African movement, right? The idea that, you know, black folks, yes, we want to go back to Africa. Like, we'd love to. You want to get the hell out of here. And so there was a huge movement in the early 1900s and even before that, right? With the Black Star going to Malcolm X and all this other stuff. You know, Frederick Douglass and all that. You know, it was a huge movement to for Pan-Africanism, all the way up to the Black Panthers and stuff like that. Right? Pan-Africanism was a huge part of Black culture. But at some point, somehow, some way, some of it began to be corrupted. In terms of like people really going a little crazy with it, right? With the idea of we was kings, you know. Yes, again, like I've mentioned many times before, Africa had many, many empires and kingdoms and this, that, and the other. But that's not what made Africa great, right? In my opinion, right? It just shows that it was just the same as every other nation or every other continent. But at some point, you know, you begin to have like these conspiracy theorists and like this confluence, I should say, of conspiracy theorists, of weird spiritual folks and religious folks who like have this like Muslim aspect with Christianity, with like, well, we're the real Jews and all this other stuff, and they try to put everything in one, and like this idea of like, oh, you know, well, black people are like gods and everything, like it gets crazy, like it gets insane, to the point where it just becomes a joke. And I think that is deeply concerning, because it makes it corrupts the entire concept of understanding the history of Africa, right? Of understanding why and how we got here, right? So now whenever you hear people, now, I mean, it is getting better, especially most recently, as we kind of distance from the prevalence of Hoteperi. But definitely during the times of the 80s, 90s, and even early 2000s, whenever you tried to talk about how Africa had, you know, kingdoms or, you know, all these other interesting history, then people would be like, oh, just assume that you're a Hotep. And you're not really, you know, making sense. But a lot of that, I bring all this up because a lot of that is unfortunately I don't want to say a cancer, maybe like a minor cancer, if you could say that, like a tumor, on hip hop, right? Because that, what that has done is, in my opinion, it really destroyed the idea of conscious rap, right? Because again, like I said before, hip hop started from both the party aspect and the expression of like real life aspect, right? And that expression aspect, that rebellious aspect, right, that artistic aspect, created a lot of amazing, what we would call conscious rap. Now, before it was more kind of aggressive, you know, you got your NWA and stuff like that. And I think that identified, of course, with a lot of folks, not just black folks, but of course other folks out in other cultures, because everybody suffers from the system that we live in. And so, or at least a lot of people do. And so that, a lot of people identified with that. But when you had these Hoteps coming in and be like, oh yeah, we was gods, you know, we was kings and all this other stuff. And putting in the, you know, the sacred numbers and all this other stuff, and just going insane with it. It made the entire idea of conscious rap kind of a joke too, right? Where people will begin to associate conscious rap with Hoteperi, right? With this idea that, oh, you're not really talking about the actual problems of the world that we live in, like police brutality, but you're talking about like, oh, how these conspiracy theorists of how, like, you know, the presidency of reptiles and all this other stuff. Like, so it makes the idea of conscious rap, you know, just ridiculous. And at least in my opinion, that's why there's been this dearth of actual conscious rap. And I think that's a huge, huge missed opportunity for music in general, but especially hip hop, right? Because many other genres can talk about this stuff, of course. Like, there's a huge element of that in rap, and goodness, in rock and in metal. But I'm be honest with you, a lot of people cannot understand metal, right? Even me, like, I've been listening to a lot of metal, and for a long time, I wasn't listening to a whole lot before. It was more recently I got more and more into it, but I've always listened to a little bit of metal at least. But I'm still not to a point where I actually understand what the hell they're saying when they're like screaming and stuff like that. At least not all the time. But a lot of that stuff is extremely rebellious and extremely, you know, expressive of the problems that we have and all those other things. But unfortunately, that a lot of people can't really, you know, get into it. It has a high, what's the term? A high bar. Like, it's hard to get into, unfortunately. But hip hop has a very low bar in terms of accessibility, right? It's very easy to understand what people are talking about, as long as you're not mumbling and shit like that. So, hip hop has a huge ability, right, to identify and to reach a lot of people with these messages. But when the vast majority of it is commoditized and focused on this glorification of the kayfabe and treating the kayfabe, and again, remember, the kayfabe is this mask, is this kind of pretending to be a certain role. But when many people are seeing the kayfabe as real, you know, and focusing more and more on that, on the glorification of all these terrible elements of the lifestyle rather than the problems of the lifestyle, then people, you know, then the entire industry or the entire genre becomes associated with that sort of thing. And we lose out on the power of hip hop in general, and music in general, in my opinion, to really talk about these impactful things and to move people with these impactful things. In fact, and this is another element that I should have talked about before, but a lot of hip-hop also comes, it was black music in general, right? Like, even before hip-hop, you know, with the creation of jazz and rhythm and blues and stuff like that. Little bug. A lot of that came from quote-unquote Negro spirituals, right? And those, of course, were themselves from, like I said before, the polytheistic religions. And this is another aspect of hip-hop that I really don't like today, is the glorification of Christianity, right? Is the idea of like, oh, God got me, you know, God this, God that, right? You know, they'd be saying some toxic-ass lyrics and then turn around and be like, yeah, God got me, you know, like, God did it. I'm like, what? Not only is it completely ridiculous in terms of, like, the lore of Christianity that you can say all this terrible toxic shit and then turn around and be like, yeah, I'm with God. This just kind of like, again, I started as a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, like one of the most restrictive of like Christian religion. So I understand a lot of that, the Bible and stuff like that. So to me, it's kind of ridiculous to be doing that. But also on the other side, it's the fact that Christianity was one of the biggest tools, right, to essentially destroy black people, to destroy Africa, right? It was one of the essential tools, right? I mean that, like you can look into like the whole idea of Terra Nullius, right? The idea of the scramble for Africa. A huge part of that was justified through religion, specifically Christianity and Catholicism. They ain't getting out, you know, as well, both of them, right? It was the idea of like, oh, these people, they don't praise God. They're not Christians or they're not Catholics. And so they're not humans, right? They're not, you know, on the same level. And so we can all go in there and fuck them up, right? And do some terrible stuff to them. And, you know, even to this day, a lot of, you know, the problems of modern day colonialism happens through the idea of evangelism, right? This is idea of like, oh, we have to go and give them God, show them the Bible, stuff like that, baptize them. Not only is that extremely freaking racist, but it also, once again, takes away the breadth and diversity and depth of actual, you know, the actual polytheistic cultures and belief systems and rituals and history and even oral history, right? A lot of the oral history of Africa, or a lot of the history of Africa was spread through oral history. And I mentioned this many times before, but written history is not necessarily better than oral history, but it's treated as such because written history was more popular in Europe, right? Even though there were plenty of other, you know, oral history-based cultures in Europe, but those also died out, right? And we can get a whole other thing about that another time, but I've talked about this before. But written records is cool, don't get me wrong, it's very useful, but it's not necessarily better, right? There's pros and cons to both approaches, to both written and oral. But the fact that you listen to podcasts, the fact that you probably, you know, most people don't read books, the fact that even today with 99% literacy, most people have a reading level of like sixth graders or third graders or worse, shows that written is not necessarily better, right? We communicate primarily through oral, through audio, right? And so it's kind of ridiculous to just point to like a written records as like, or written history as more valuable. But all that to say that there's a rich history of, you know, these different cultures and stuff like that, that's passed on through oral histories. And a lot of that happens in these spiritual rituals, right? In these rites of passages, these quote-unquote secrets, societies and things like that. That's where a lot of the history was passed on, right? And so if you go in and demonize people's belief systems and say, oh, don't talk about that anymore, and all this other stuff, then a lot of that gets lost, right? A lot of that gets lost. And a big reason why it was Christianity and stuff like that was even so successful is because it's inherently cancerous. And what I mean by that is that it inherently depends on the people who believe in that system to destroy other belief systems, right? Whereas many polytheistic belief systems were inherently open, like inherently, you know, accessible and stuff like that, where they can just bring more into the same system and, like, you know, mix and match and stuff like that. But with monotheistic religions, right, the very doctrine says that anybody who does not believe what you believe are bad people. And so you're okay to, you know, kill them or to destroy their beliefs, to destroy this, that, and the other, right? These are terrible people. They're going to hell, this, that, and the other, right? And so it reinforces, it creates this mentality and this culture of going in and destroying other people and, like, going to war or doing this bunch of terrible things that religion has done in the name of the religion. Whereas, and this makes it, in my opinion, cancerous, right? Because what does cancer do? It goes in, takes resources from other things in order to spread itself without any regard to anything else. And that's exactly what monotheistic religions do. Like I said, I mentioned this before. Yeah, I be getting on a lot of, you know, Christianity stuff like that. I got smoke for all of them, you know. I just have more experience with Christianity. But the same thing goes for Islamic, you know, beliefs and stuff like that. Jewish beliefs. I don't care what it is. If you're a monotheistic religion, I don't like you. And don't get me wrong, many other, like, polytheistic religions, stuff like that, they still have problems as well. I have problems with almost every religion. If it's an institution, if it's a hierarchical institution, I have problems with it. All right? Because they all almost always justify terrible acts. Right? Anyways, I bring all that up because a lot of hip hop, you know, has this, I would say, inherent, you know, I'm just forgetting my words today, but this inherent, like, discombobulation, this inherent mental gymnastics that is required to believe in God at the same time as preach a whole bunch of toxic lyrics, at the same time as, you know, completely ignore the history of Black culture. And I think that is a huge element of what makes modern hip-hop so prone to corruption and so prone to this kind of destruction of the culture, to be honest with you, right? It's because if you don't have a core belief that is actually, like, self-consistent, that is, like, logical in terms of, like, you know, the internal mechanisms of the belief system, then it's inherently going to be open to being, you know, corrupted, right? To being destroyed, because anybody can have their own interpretation of what that means, and that makes it much harder to, you know, to stay consistent with what the culture is actually supposed to be. Now, that in and of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, having flexibility is extremely important for evolution and adaptation. But, and this may seem off topic, but this is why I do think it's important to have different political sides, like to have conservatism and to have liberalism and stuff like that, but not in the way that we have today, because it's not actual conservatism or liberalism, right? But throughout history and many other cultures, you do see not a binary system, but I know there's a word for this, but many different systems, right? Where you had some people are trying to conserve a specific type of value or specific values from maybe this belief system or this spiritual. Like, for instance, like a lot of polytheism, right? You would have people who are trying to conserve values for that are important to this spirit, right? This, like, ancestor or whatever. So it could be, you know, the idea of the rivers, right? And so they would be very, 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 goodness. They would be thinking a lot about how to keep the rivers clean, for instance. while another ones will be thinking about hunting, right? So they'll be thinking about like how we can, you know, maintain our the hunting stock. Another folks will be thinking about the trees, you know, how we can maintain the trees. And other people, you know, so it goes, you have this very diverse range and this diverse range of political beliefs and spiritual beliefs and all this other stuff. And they can all play off each other to create a very rich, you know, culture that cares about a lot of different things, right? So the there's no, this idea of like having a strictly binary conservatism and liberal doesn't make sense, because like what are you conserving? Like if you're conserving, you know, quote unquote family values, but those family values were only like existent in the last 100 years and like didn't exist for thousands of years before that, then that's not really a very traditional value, right? Like, it's a fairly new thing. Like the idea that you could conserve the nuclear family, even though for most of human history, you know, we did not have nuclear families. Like, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. And on the other side, you know, if you want to say you're about liberalism and you know, being more equal and fair and other stuff, but you believe in the government's ability to control people, like, that don't make no sense either. Right? A lot of our politics today, a lot of our beliefs today are completely just suffering from this internal inconsistency. This inherent the phrase I was looking for, cognitive dissonance, right? And that, you see a lot of that, unfortunately, in hip hop today. This cognitive dissonance of like, oh yeah, we're gonna be, you know, religious, we're gonna be Christian or whatever, but at the same time we're gonna be talking about shooting people, and at the same time we're gonna just completely, you know, be misogynistic and all. So it's just so many elements that's just bogging the genre down. So all that to say, I think things can be better, right? Things can be very, very much better. Goodness, I'm all over the place. Very much better. a lot better. I need to just pause more, but a lot of noise going on. I did this early in the morning because it's actually really nice outside, but it's a little busy. But anyways, things can be a lot better, right? I think hip-hop can still have like this party entertainment aspect. I think that's a valuable aspect of hip-hop. But there's no reason, in my opinion, why you have to mix that with the aggrandizement, the glorification of the toxic elements of, you know, the lifestyles that people are trying to get away from, that people don't actually want, right? There's no reason why, for instance, Drake should be making party music about hood culture, right? About like, I'm about to click up, you know, like, what? I've been turning that into a party song. Like, you walking around talking about, yeah, I got the gun, you know, like, that don't make no sense, right? We can make party music without talking about that stuff very easily, right? Like, it's, like, you know, people love Earth, Wind, and Fire. People love, you know, the Fugees. You know, people love, you know, all these types of things that are more, in my, like, honestly wholesome. Right? We can make party music that's wholesome and that's really fun to play without, you know, glorifying the elements that we're trying to get away from. And at this, on the other side of that, you know, when it comes to expressing where we're coming from, like where a lot of people are living and stuff like that, their lifestyles, we can do, it's a little bit harder, but you can talk about, you know, where you come from without glorifying it. For instance, if I make some music about where I come from, you know, and the poverty I experienced, you know, having to fight roaches and, you know, and, you know, not having, you know, freaking waters because the water bill gets cut off, or lights and all this other stuff, or having to walk, you know, miles in order to get to school or get back home, or this, that, and the other. Like, I'm not going to be talking about that in a way that sounds like, oh yeah, I wish I could go back to it. Or like, you know, I wish everybody could. You know, I'm not going to be talking about it in the sense of like, this was the best time of my life or anything like that. Like, I'm going to be like, yeah, this is the life I live. And I might make it fun, I might make it jokey, right? Like, this was kind of crazy. But it's going to be clear that this was not, you know, this is not the ideal life, right? And I think, again, it's more difficult to do, but I do think it's possible, right? I do think it's very possible. I want to find examples. I wish, again, I probably should have done some research before I got back on here, but I just wanted to talk. I might make a video about that, like about the examples, like showing the nuance of like, because I'm sure there are artists who do this today. Like for instance, I've talked about it before, Schoolboy Q, right? And that song Blessed, go check it out. It's an older song, about maybe like almost 10 years by now, but it's one of my favorite songs, even to this day. And you can clearly see that in the music, right? Where he's talking about like the death of, I don't think it was his child, like his friends or something like that. And you know how it was, you know, you had this gun violence that he's talking about in there, and you had all these other elements, and how people used like drugs to kind of fade away, and like kind of as a way to kind of get away from this pain. But he's not glorifying it, right? The music doesn't come off as like, oh yeah, we should go do that, or he enjoys this. It comes like, you can feel the pain in his song. You can feel the pain from that, and it's still a really good song, in my opinion. But I think we can have more examples of that and stuff like that. And I'm sure there's many other examples, but that's just kind of comes off the top of my mind. So yeah, I think. Oh yeah, and another element I wanted to talk about too, for hip-hop culture, in terms of like what needs to change, is this battle culture, right? This diss rapping and beef and stuff like that. Like I mentioned before, a lot of the quote-unquote beef and things like that in hip-hop, like the diss, comes from a culture of not only wanting to express what you're like this actual beef that you might have in a healthy way, in a non-violent way, or at least a non-physically violent way, but also comes from the culture, and I should say this as well, take a step back. The reason why machismo, right? The reason why this toxic masculinity culture itself got so big was because it also comes from a deeper culture of machismo, right? Of having to appear as very strong, right? And that comes from a reaction to, of course, slavery, of like, you know, that you had these practices of buck breaking, you had these practices of, you know, splitting families and stuff like that. And so you had to be very strong to come out of that, you know, with any amount of sanity. And then as slavery ended, you know, for those 100 years or so after that, or 200 years, no, barely 100 years. Yeah, from like 1845 or 65, whatever, to 1965 to the 1960s. Yeah, only 100 years. You had to have this as people tried to integrate, right, into the quite frankly white society, right. You still experience a huge amount of slavery, like the KKK, you know, especially in the South, was existed. But even in the North, right, the North were not, you know, all Quakers or anything like that. Like, most of them were very racist, right? To the fact that even prior, people don't know this, but I think I've talked about this before, but leading up to the years of the Civil War, nobody really cared about the black slaves anymore, right? Like, even the abolitionists, many of the abolitionists started talking less and less about freeing the slaves, freeing the actual black slaves, and they started talking more about the quote-unquote white slaves, right? The people who were working in the North in these terrible conditions in factories. And don't get me wrong, of course, you know, those conditions were indeed terrible in these factories. But the fact that, once again, you know, the actual slavery happening was downplayed or was ignored or was lesser than, you know, the white folks, and that were free, but they were still living miserable lives, kind of shows you the kind of priorities throughout history. But all that to say that as black folks had to be, or started to get integrated, or started to integrate themselves, and you had this, we can get to this whole other thing between integration versus exclusion. But as, you know, folks started to integrate into the society, they still had to deal with these extremely racist people. Even in the North, you had these people who would they would actually allow slave catchers to come up from the South and re-enslave people prior to the abolition of slavery. And even after that, you still had extremely, you know, racist folks, because, you know, they would use black folks basically as an extortion for labor, you know, kind of strikes and stuff like that, where people were, again, these factories were horrible places, and you had child labor and everything like that. And so when people went on labor strikes, you know, they would, even though that was very efficient as a means of like showing the problems of the labor conditions, but the owners of those factories would realize that people were racist, of course, and so they would not include the black people in the support systems for many of those labor strikes. So again, oh my gosh, there's so much we can get into with all this, because it's all like intermingled. But all that to say that, like, you know, for pretty much all the history of America, all right, black people had to appear as very strong, especially black men. You know, black women, of course, were also very strong. They were like the mainstay of the culture, right? I'll say like this: black women and black men, you know, had to be strong in different ways, or had to show that strength in different ways, right? Whereas, you know, a lot of black men may be, you know, have been targeted as like on the physical altercations and stuff like that. A lot of black women were targeted on the sexual altercations. You know, you have this huge problem of sexual assault for a lot of black women throughout history. And that has its own thing there. And again, you can bring in the queer aspect of all this. But all that to say that machismo comes from something, right? It comes from this history of like having to appear strong. And so that's why it was so easy to step into the toxic masculinity kind of role from that. So yeah, this is a lot, man. And so in today's time, I think especially as people are seeing, you know, the problems of toxic masculinity and seeing how to appear masculine without being toxic, and redefining what it even means to be masculine, to be feminine, to be a person, right, to be and accepting queerness and accepting all these other things, now you have more and more space, you know, for people to express themselves in different ways. And so kind of got off topic. Oh yeah, I was talking about battle rap. But battle rap especially, you see a lot of this, because of course, you know, toxic masculinity is a huge aspect of battle rap, all right, because of all that I stated before. And so when it comes to making disses and everything like that, and battle rap is actually more interesting, because at least in battle rap, it's an actual competition, right? It's treated more like a sport, where people go to a place and they say, we're going to listen to people battle rap, you know. And so there's rules that you set down and everything like that, and people have the expectation that even if people are saying all sorts of crazy stuff, you know, there's still rules. Like, you don't talk about people's moms or something like that, right? You don't talk about people's family, right? You keep it, you know, professional in terms of like, you know, how you're going out at people. And you recognize that, yeah, you're going to get dissed, but this is where you have to put down your ego, right? And so this is what I meant to go into. Goodness. What's really interesting about this is that the toxic masculinity aspects actually has a very interesting interaction with the history and culture of reverse dominance tactics, right? And there's a very, very deep history, even deeper history than toxic masculinity, of reverse dominance, of humiliation as a method of creating humility in people, specifically in males, right? And I've talked about this before as well in other podcasts, but we see this in some hunter-gatherer cultures, like for instance the San people of the Kalahari Desert, right? They had this whole thing where they would, you know, humiliate the meat, right? The hunters, right? Or when a hunter, you know, comes in with something, they make a big kill or whatever, you know, the people would make fun of you, like, oh, this is so skinny, this is so, you know, this is terrible, I don't know if it's going to feed all of us, you know, this is, you know, not great. And the people who hunted it would have to take that, we have to be like, take it with good spirits, because they understand that people aren't actually being, you know, real about it, they're just trying to teach them to be humble, right? Because, you know, they're in their culture and their sayings, they said, you know, I don't remember the exact thing, but one of the most dangerous things is a young man who thinks he's a big shot, essentially, right? Who thinks he can tell everybody what to do because he, you know, he did something, you know, cool, right? And so you have to humble him. And it's funny too, because when I was watching a YouTube video talking about that, and some people in the comments were like, "Oh, that's terrible! How does it incentivize people to do good things?" I'm like, that really shows you the fragile ego. The fragile egos that are endemic to our society today. Throughout most of human history, people did cool things because they wanted to do the cool thing, right? They did a good job because they wanted to do so. They didn't do so because they were going to be rewarded for it. They didn't need that reward, right? The reward was doing the thing and realizing that they could do it, right? And yes, it was cool to be rewarded for it, right? But that was never necessarily the goal, right? And a lot of people think that in order to do a good thing, right, you have to be rewarded for it, really creates a very fragile culture, right? Where because there's a lot of things that you have to do in life that won't be rewarded. But if you have this mentality that you have to be rewarded in order to do a good thing, or that you should be rewarded for doing good things, then it turns into this thing of like what I said before, you have to be rewarded in order to do a good thing, right? All that to say that there's a very, very, very deep culture of ego busting and reverse dominance tactics and stuff like that, and a lot of specifically African cultures, but I'm sure that exists in other cultures as well that were more egalitarian throughout history. But what that dovetails really, really nicely in some ways with battle rap culture, right? Because like I said, it's both the toxic masculinity aspects of like glorifying, you know, gun cultures and drugs and all this other stuff, while at the same time, you know, it employs a lot of reverse dominance tactics of like, yeah, you might be super talented, you might be super great and everything like that, but we're going to diss the shit out of you, right? It comes from, and you see this even outside of battle rap in roast culture, right? And when kids are young, sitting at the lunch table, people just roasting. You have these roast sessions. I don't know how many people had this experience, but like it was very, very normal in my school, stuff like that, in many other black schools. I'm not sure if other, you know, that happens in other cultures. To the extent where, just another brief aside, I might have to make another segment. But like, yes, there was bullying, but it wasn't really as normalized as you would see on TV. Like, so I don't really know the extent of bullying in other schools. I know it is a big problem, obviously, right? But in many black schools, bullying, I'm not going to say it didn't exist. It certainly did. I've even seen it. But it was not, I want to say that bad, like, or I don't want to say that because, you know, people who are victims of it are, you know, it's pretty bad, but it's not that wide scale. Like, you don't see a lot of it, right? You don't really see a whole lot of it in black culture. I mean, in black schools, at least in my knowledge, I might be wrong on that one. But what you do see is a whole lot of roasting, right? Well, people will roast each other a lot. And sometimes, yes, the roasting would get overkill and it would get into, you know, the bullying, you know, space. But that a lot of that you can probably say is because, you know, a lot of these kids did not, you know, learn that humility. They did not really, they're just doing this because everybody else is doing it. They don't have a understanding of where this culture is coming from or where this thing is coming from. But yeah, I'm just going to make another segment because I still got a little bit more to talk about. Okay. So, sorry, it takes a few minutes for this thing to load up, so I forgot exactly where I was. But yeah, you had roast culture, very popular in a lot of black schools. And yes, that did go into bullying, unfortunately. I would love to see some sort of like meta study or something like that of like, what does bullying look like in different schools, in different cultures? But all that to say that I think in Black cultures, especially, you still had this remnant of, you know, roast culture, right? From these more ancient, you know, kind of origins. And even if it wasn't like a generational, like, cultural thing that has passed down through the ages, it might itself just be an emergent factor, right? It might be something that simply emerges in an environment where people inherently recognize, you know, the benefits of, you know, reverse dominance tactics, right? Where they recognize that, you know, people who get too big in their britches, you know, get really egotistical and stuff like that, and you don't really want that. So you have this practice, you know, people develop, you know, this practice of reverse dominance, of humiliation, in order to create, you know, a lot of the that humbleness, that humility that, you know, we actually desire. And just a brief aside here, I think this is where a lot of, you know, comedy comes from. This is why, in my opinion, conservative comedy is horrible, because it doesn't make sense, right? A lot of comedy is punching up, is reverse dominance tactics, is making fun of people who have more privilege and have more money and resources and everything like that, who have a huge ego, and breaking it down, right? Humbling them through the comedy, right? And you see this a lot in, for instance, people, especially in Europe, right? You see this a lot in the jester culture, right? Where jesters were even hired, right? Were brought into the court to make fun of the royals, because that was the only way in which the commoners, you know, had a way to actually, you know, quote unquote, talk back to the royals. They couldn't do it themselves, but the jester could, right? And the court recognized that. Like, if they didn't have a jester, then it was harder for them to, A, recognize when commoners were not happy with them, with the decisions that they're making, and B, there would be no outlet for the commoners to express that opinion. Therefore, they would have like these rebellions that just popped up unannounced. And that kind of makes the jester problematic in some ways, because it kind of undercuts the ability for commoners to actually make real revolution coming out of nowhere. But you see the point here. It's like comedy was used as a way to, you know, punch up. And so when you have this punching down thing where you're like making fun of people who are already marginalized, it's like, well, it just becomes bullying, right? It's not really comedy anymore. It's not really funny anymore, in my opinion, at least. I think that, anyways. Yeah, so for hip hop especially, right? I think that is where that's the role of diss tracks, right? Is breaking down people's ego, is recognizing that, yeah, you might be hot shit, but look at this, right? Look at this problem right here. And people will basically humble you through the music, right? But again, when you have this confusion, this cognitive dissonance, this of treating the kayfabe, treating the pretense of, you know, oh, I'm a hard dude, I'm a authentic gangster or whatever, with the real thing, then any artistic beef becomes real beef, right? Any humiliation tactics, any joking becomes just real, what do you call it, you know, affecting you as a person, right? They're trying to actually come at you. And I think that is a huge problem with today's hip-hop, is that people don't understand the difference between those. And so in order to fix that, I think we have to, you know, solidify the culture, right? We have to actually talk, have more discussions about these sorts of things, and eventually have artists actually create music that make that sorts of thing, make those sorts of things clear, right? And even more things like Jay-Z, like back in let me drink some more water. Throat just getting dry so fast. But yeah, I think this is why we need to have more things of like when Jay-Z and Nas shook hands after their, it was years after their diss, after their whole quote unquote beef, right? But they shook hands to show, and I even watched some of the interview, right? They showed that they were done, like that's it, like it was a thing for the art, and it's over now, right? And unfortunately, there were some people, I'm not sure if it was a lot of people per se, but there were some big names even that was like, oh, this is terrible, you know, blah 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 blah. It's because those people believed in the kayfabe too much. It's like those people, those are the type of people who look at wrestling and really think it's real. And be like, you know, why is anyways, I think you get the point here. But so I think for hip hop, especially, you know, we should have more disses, especially in these days when you have like folks like Drake that think they're the next Michael Jackson. They need to be humbled, right? But at the same time, you need to also recognize them as people, right? We need to have, you know, Kendrick Lamar and I guess J. Cole and Drake, you know, shaking hands, be like, yeah, we're, you don't have to be friends or anything like that, but like, we're not trying to actually kill each other, right, when we're doing all this. But we on the track, right? It's still gonna go ham. And at the same time, we should also have rules, right? Don't talk about freaking people's mothers and daughters, Drake. And then turn around and be surprised when, you know, folks like Pusha T put all your business out there. But yeah, this is why I think it's very important for a culture to not just exist by, you know, by incident, by just like, oh, this is what people do, but by intention. We need to be way more intentional with our cultures, right? We need to actually have discussion about what we want to be a part of the culture and what we do not. This is the benefit of gatekeeping, right? People give gatekeeping a bad rap. Don't get me wrong, there is some badness in there, right? Especially if it's in a hierarchical institution of like gatekeeping people access to resources that you need or this, that, and the other, or gatekeeping membership based on a whole bunch of stupid, you know, traits. But gatekeeping is also very important for keeping a community safe, right? For being like, okay, is this person actually here to do, you know, to be a part of the culture, to respect others and everything like that? Are they going to respect the rules to the system, or are they just belligerent, you know, or inauthentic, or this, that, and the other, right? And I think we need to bring that back, right? I think we need to have gatekeeping that is actually good, right? That's not, it's not just old heads being like, oh, this is not hip hop, or whatever. It's people recognizing that, okay, this is what hip hop is, and we've all come together to, you know, have this discussion of like this, that, and the other. And it's gonna be a lot. It's gonna be a lot of discussion now, especially because nowadays we have a lot of, you know, problems in hip hop culture. We have a lot of problematic aspects that are like tumors on the culture, and we need to excise all of them. So the discussion is going to be hard, but I think it's necessary. And I think if we do that, then it'll be the best thing for the culture, and we'll really save the genre. But yeah, those are a lot of my thoughts there. I think hip hop can be an incredibly beautiful and influential and powerful method of expressing the life that people live, and I think it could be one of the key ways in which we establish a actual revolution, right? By embracing people from different cultures, and showing them that if they want to be part of the hip-hop culture, for instance, this is what that means, right? And furthermore, showing why hip-hop is, or what hip-hop can do, right? What hip-hop can be, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, just the surface level bullcrap. It can be extremely powerful. It can be extremely, you know, good way of recognizing what people are doing and how they can, you know, make a better future, and improving the world, and showing the actual problems of the world, and you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. But yeah, that's what ended for now. I do want to make this a real thing, like make a video really describing, you know, what can come of this, the history, and what this can look like. But that is going to be its own project right there. But as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for thinking with me. Let me know what you think. Have a great day. Keep being awesome. Don't be afraid to be revolutionary. Don't be afraid to be radical. All that stuff. You know, delve into the history of hip-hop. You know? Delve into the history of everything, really. There's so much history that's so incredibly fascinating and helps us learn a whole lot about the world. So, yeah. Don't be afraid to delve into to learn about history. And thanks again. Have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.